yeah. A little summer madness to get you in the mood for the nice warm summer months. We had the very first complete week of summer in the Boulder City. In the conference with Mark Garcia on 1980 and the Superstation Crew in the Game. So as you're going out and enjoying the beautiful weather, don't forget to wear your mask. Don't forget to do social distancing. Don't get too relaxed. Just make sure that we're doing the right things and keep those numbers going down. We want to continue to make sure that you're all staying home and staying safe and doing the right thing. If you're going out, be smart, okay? Are we going to continue the conversation? I have on the phone with me for a few more moments before I segue into a conversation about cultural change. But this conversation, the next couple of minutes, is kind of prepping for the next conversation. You know, if you all know me, by the way, 313-778-7600, I typically provide you with information that you use. And that's the intent of in the conference room, is give you information you can use to prepare yourself for the week. But there's something that's been on my mind for the last couple of days. And I'm not going to mention any organization. I'm not going to mention any names. Never do that. I'm not going to call them out in this forum right now. I just wouldn't do that. But we're in a city that's 80% African American. And we're, you know, minorities and people of color make up 25 to 30% of Wayne County's the metropolitan population. 5 million people, over a million individuals, African Americans, and then some. Okay, I'm just trying to set the proper context. And in the state of Michigan, African Americans make up 13% of the state's population. So let me restate that: Detroit, 80%; metropolitan area, 25 to 30%. State of Michigan, 13%. But yet, we still have a problem here. We still have an issue. And with everything that's going on in this country with the social protests and the social movement, you would think their eyes are being enlightening. I get it. All right? But also, you know, I'm hearing about organizations making statements of commitment. Oh, we're committed to diversity and inclusion. That's fair. That's fine. And I'm going to contribute $1 million. That's fine as well. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not enough. That's not enough. That's like putting lipstick on a pig. So what's been troubling me is I've been tracking via certain things through social media. And there's a major organization, I'm not going to say who it is, all right, but they just hired a bunch of employees. And about 40 to 45 of them. And as I view this picture, it was brought to my attention, only one was African-American. One out of over 40. Think about that for a second. That's an insult. And people of color in this entire picture was very small. Again, that really shocked me and appalled me, because we are in a city where we're talking about diversity and inclusion and equity. You know, so I'm going with this is that this is going to require a cultural shift. And I'll get into that conversation about 5 minutes with two psychologists who are going to be joining us from Psych Assets. But Eric, you know how I feel. And you kind of heard my frustration in the last couple of days. We're not going to go into particulars. I'm going to say that for another time. But you know, you work in HR, and you know where I'm coming from this conversation. Why don't you take over for a minute or two and kind of give you a perspective?
Coming now. Some people may know what we're talking about. I won't share the name of the organization. But I was appalled as well, because originally, as I looked at the picture, it was 42 interns and 42 interns. And I looked at the picture, I'm like, wow, you have a city that's 80%, at least 80% black. And for them to not be able to find, well, let me step back. This speaks to the tone deafness of so many individuals, because we have some great HBCUs in this country. Those HBCUs, the talent there is just amazing, just impeccable. You have one of the highest ranking people in the Department of Defense from an HBCU, where I went, Talladega College. You have former cabinet members from HBCUs. So for a company to not be able to find someone from any of these colleges to bring it to their internship program is appalling. You have a lot of residents in the city of Detroit, the southeast Michigan area, as far north is Saginaw, as far west is Muskegon, Benton Harbor, as well as Grand Rapids, that attend HBCUs. And there's no excuse for it. And culture is very important. And I spoke last week in Pontiac, and one of the things I said, the money is good, but where are your actions? Money only helps in part of the problem if you have guilt as it relates to Black Lives Mattering or all of that nature. But your actions and what you do matters more to me. And to see that picture was just amazing, especially considering, and I don't want to tip my hand, about a year ago, you spoke a different tune as it relates to bringing minorities into your company. So we have to do better. Companies have to do better. And you can't do one. You can't say one thing and do another that is contradictory to what you say. You lose credibility that way, and people will always question your integrity.
So there's going to be more about this. I just want to engage this conversation. Eric, I know you got to run. You got to do your thing, because this is a nice segue into my next conversation. But Eric, I want to wish you continued success. Good luck today on that protest. I'll be in touch with you. I applaud you and your team for pulling us together. And that's going to be this afternoon in Southfield, Michigan at 2 o'clock. There will be a peaceful protest and also a voter registration drive and focused on the U.S. Census data 2020. So, Eric, good luck, and I'll be in touch with you soon, okay?
Oh, thanks, Mark. Thanks for this opportunity to speak to the listeners about this event today as well.
Oh, thank you. And speaking of which, we're going to be talking about cultural change. And I'm so pleased to welcome to our very special guest from Psych Assets. And they're Dr. Paula Kleiger and Lori Blumenstein-Bott. And I want to welcome them back into the conference room. Lori and Paula, thank you for joining. How are you doing? Good morning.
So great to see you, Mark.
Great to see you as well.
Thank you.
Good, good. And it's a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. Whenever it's sunny like this, I'm happy. I'm always smiling. But you've heard my segue, and I know I have callers, so callers, I'm going to ask you to be patient, if you don't mind. But you heard the previous conversation here talking about cultural change and what's going on as it relates to the social justice movement that's taking place across the country. You know, we're talking about changing the business culture, the commitment statements, and things like that. And you know, and there's nothing wrong with commitment statements. There's nothing wrong with writing a check. There's nothing wrong with that. Let me make sure that's clear. But let's just kind of jump right into that conversation this morning about changing the business culture. Dr. Kleiger, I know that you have a book, Life Exposes, and you want to share a piece from your book that kind of helped the level set the conversation. So I'll turn it over to you.
Absolutely. These are turbulent times, right? And so I chose something for us to just bring ourselves into even more of a focus on these issues. And how we're going to do, not just speak. So here, this is a piece called Life Exposes from my book, Power Your Heart, Power Your Mind. And it goes like this. Life exposes us at the root, including the pain and suffering. And we learn to stay, to bear the unbearable. Reminding ourselves that through grief and through mourning come welcomed rebirth, the insight that can power us to change for the good forever. So I wrote that piece in mind because and of presenting that piece because I think we need to be thinking about the commitment statement, sure. But we also need to take those commitment statements to the next step.
Yeah.
And so how do we do that is a big issue because everyone wants to say something. And to give due credit, everyone wants to give of themselves at a time like this. They want to not feel powerless or they want to not feel helpless. But we know for generations, and we know for years and years, decades, got lots of commitment statements. And at times we move forward and then we move back. What are your thoughts, Lori?
Well, first of all, I think, Mark, thanks for introducing this subject. And your last caller really set the right tone. Where are the actions? And when we work with organizations and the individuals within that organization, the focus is on transformational change. You cannot just put out a statement without having the foundation and the commitment of leadership to really move that statement forward. Otherwise, they are just words on a piece of paper, and that doesn't take anyone anywhere. The other thing that I think is really important is that when we work with individuals, we talk about exactly what we're living right now. These are significant life events that are happening all around us, and they're the drivers for change. They can be the drivers as long as we embrace the opportunity, and that is key.
You know, one of the things that I talk a lot about is critical incidents. This is a time of crisis and trauma, right? But it's also a time when people, their minds, their hearts, their whole sense of movement or potential movement, the membrane, I call it, the mind-body-heart membrane is wide open to wake up. This is the time for us to step in and to lean in with our own discomfort, to begin to work on, okay, what can we actually do organizationally, starting at the top, as Lori said. And we mean the top. We've learned very early on that if someone calls us up and says, well, we want you to work with a team, or we want you to work with a group, we then ask the question, well, what about you? Or what about your leadership? Or why do you want us just to work with a small team around issues of racial equality, equity, and so forth? Where is your leadership? What is your leadership actually doing now and in the past around these issues?
So let me jump in for a second. We're talking to a couple of psychologists, Dr. Paula Krieger and Lori Blumenstein-Bott, and there was Psych Hussess out of Birmingham, Michigan, and also out of New York. And, you know, this is a very important conversation for me because, as I referenced in the previous, right before we transitioned over to Paula and Lori, I'm a little bit troubled. And I'm troubled because, you know, quite frankly, I've been reading about all of these commitment statements and people writing checks and saying, hey, yes, we need to make a change and we're committed to the organization to make it. I get all that. There's nothing wrong with it. But then I see in the great city of Detroit as 80% African American, you know, 5 million people in our metropolitan area, 20 to 25, 30% are people of color, right? But there's no change. And in my world, when I'm thinking in my head, there's a lot of talk and no action, and that frustrates me because when we talk about Dr. Krieger and Lori, when we talk about changing the environment, it's more than writing a check. How do you get to changing the culture, the mindset, and getting people to believe, you know, that we need to do this?
I'm going back to the critical incident. The companies that find themselves in trouble, I mean, I hate to say it, but the bottom line is when somebody actually says, an employee says, gets upset and goes to the top and says, look, you are discriminating against me, or I've been in this position, I've been passed over a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they shake things up. That is the moment in time, actually, that's the critical incident. And I can tell you the reason why I know this. We have to have critical incidents in order to move.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
Whoa. I took the first step. All right, go ahead. I guess that was a commercial, but go ahead.
Well, we talk about technology and critical incidents. There's a little moment in time there.
Yeah, that's
about
right.
About hope. But, I mean, I think what I wanted to say, and Lori can jump in here and talk a little bit, too, about what she's been doing to work with people. And then I can come back. But I wanted to emphasize this notion of you got to have something happen, because often the leadership itself is not going to, they have to feel it in order to believe it. They have to identify with the pain and suffering, right? in order to begin to actually take a statement to a movement.
Yeah. Yeah, Lori, please jump in. I'm going to get your perspective, your thought.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest things, and I want to talk to individuals that aren't in leadership, that are part of an organization, that have strong feelings, and trying to figure out how do they get their voices heard. And this is just as important as leadership, because it's not that you can't be heard, it's how do you get heard. And that means that, you know, you can also approach this in a proactive way rather than a reactive way from an event with, because of what's happening in our communities. And this is the opportunity to say, can we bring people together and have a conversation? Can we talk about what's happening? Yeah, let's start simple. You know, it doesn't always have to be complicated, but use the environment that's happening right now as the impetus to begin having those conversations. It has to start. And all of us have the capacity to bring that forward.
And here's the psychological perspective as I view it, okay? I have an adult daughter. My two wonderful kids are adults now. We talked about them before. But yeah, I've raised my kids. I have a daughter here in Detroit, and my son is in Chicago. And my son, as you know, his wife have two small ones. He's going to be raising his kids. Yeah, I raise my kids and say, you can do whatever you want to do. You can be whatever you want to be. You know, and they viewed their dad, me. I was very fortunate in the corporate space where I was a trailblazer in a lot of ways. I became the most senior level marketing person across the legendary brands that you have heard of. And so in their world, they see me, and I'm a perfect role model for them. In my world, I saw my dad, who was a perfect role model for me and a lot of people in Detroit, as you all know. He was a legendary banker here in Detroit. So yeah, here I am telling them, you can be whatever you want to be. And then all of a sudden, we're in this environment, and you have the next generation, they have their kids, and they're telling them, you can be whatever you want to be. And then they see the images on television. And then they see the images in magazines. Then they see the people being hired. And they're saying, Mom, Dad, I hear what you're saying, but you're being Pollyanna, that I can't be whatever I want to be because I'm being controlled by the system, so to speak. Does that make sense? How do you adjust that psychological?
Well, you know, did you want to say something, Marie?
I guess I want to just mention that, you know, you're right. You're right. That's the where is the alignment there? I think there are opportunities that sometimes, you know, you have to find, and we always look for this in organizations that we work for, who are internal mentors that you can utilize to help you. Because you're 100% right, but there are people within organizations, because we find this all the time, that have that kind of mindset and want to, just like you're talking about, the next generation ought to be doing better than the last. My role in an organization is to mentor others.
So I want to throw another little piece out here, too, and that is, what you were able to get, Mark, from your father, and what you are passing on to your children is really terrific. And I think young people today, one of the other things that we need to pass on to them is, this has been going on for decades. And so your father had to muster that extra strength to keep movement going. You had to muster the extra strength and mindset to keep moving forward. And you did give your children what they needed to do it to, but they also need to keep in mind that that's something they will bring to the table as well, and that it's okay to feel that you have to battle through some of these moments in time. The internal mentors really matter, but you also have to find your own strength and resilience and not think or accept that it's going to be easy, because it's not. That is a reality. And let's be in reality, too. Okay? So I think that it's both finding the right kind of people who are on the same page, finding ways of mustering your own inner strength, and figuring out, by the way, also what your real talents are. Sometimes we end up doing things that we're just doing because somebody else says we're good at it, and we're helping them with it, but we have other deeper talents we could be mastering and using. That's also important. So those are just a few more thoughts around this same idea.
Brian, you've been very patient on 1980 Superstation. Brian, thanks for calling to the conference room with Mark Esty. What do you think of Brian?
Oh, Mark, it's not about being patient. You got a beautiful show, man, and I love you, man. Listen, y'all talked about leadership. I think this is the biggest problem if we stop right here. If I ask any one of y'all, who do you trust to lead this city or lead some type of a group to change black people's lives, I honestly think y'all wouldn't know. Because of the black people that have received those promise checks and enablers of this Michigan State, how dare we talk about leaders when we can't get a good meeting to get, forget reparations, just stop the bleeding and what's going on. Mark, when I call into any of the 910 shows, and Kevin and Doty personally know me, or they know me, my thing is, if we talk about what's happening to the black people, I'm a perfect example. You took my houses, and you took my music industry out of Detroit. So in other words, all the gentrification started with me and Donnell Smalls. Donnell had Prevay downtown. I don't even hear Sister Nicole talking about what happened to her brother. So here's my problem. We don't have leaders that we can get back in touch with that can follow through with what we did with, such as, look up my music industry. Friend who done it. I follow through with what I do until the enabler stopped me, which is black people. So my biggest problem when I hear any conversations about leadership, I get scared because I think about my black people that sold out for the check. I can prove it by saying anybody that was in the Coleman Young's camp sold out and they're getting checks from Duggins now. That late, great Coleman Young will be mad about everything that he told not to sell. So in other words, there was a plan, even when Coleman Young was in office, to take this city, this Section 8 out here in Novi where I'm at. You ain't never heard of no Section 8 out here. So my point is this. If Coleman knew what they were planning to do then, why is the enablers let that happen now? And we go to talk about leadership. I don't trust none of them. They don't sold us out.
All right, Brian, I appreciate it, man.
I'm trying to be truthful. When we talk about this talk, I asked from the beginning, name me one black person. Mark, I would trust you before I felt any of these people on the news. Anybody ever took 2 minutes to ask me, what is really going on?
Yeah.
And the bad part is, hold on one second. Late great Angelo Henderson, we talked about, I'm going to wrap it up. Late great Angelo Henderson, we talked about what they called the plan before he died. We talked about what they're doing now, and these black people let it happen, Mark. And I'm mad. I don't trust none of them no more. And be honest with you, I think they won.
All right. Brian, thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words. And thank you for the phone call. And I want to be, I'm going to give my guests a chance to respond. And we're talking about all people in terms of diversity. I'm talking about men, women, people of color, black, white. You know, I just want to make sure that there's a fair representation in our city. So give somebody, please respond to Brian's comments. He makes some interesting perspectives.
I think we're both, Paul and I are both sort of, where to begin. The one thing we have to recognize is the high level of frustration that is in our last caller's voice, and validate that is real. And it's the whole reason that part of our kind of mindset is helping each person to find their voice so that they can, you know, get involved and make meaning in this, you know, climate and not just kind of go with the flow of things. And that's what I hear in the caller's frustration. And I want to validate that. It is a problem. That doesn't mean that there aren't good people out there. How do we raise them up to help in meaningful ways to make a difference?
You know, I also want to resonate with the frustration. I think what you're talking about, the caller's talking about also, is that there are black people of color who, quote, put quotes around it, who make it. And become, in a way, they're not aware of their own privilege. They're not aware of the fact that they have been able to have a voice. And it's so important for us to recognize that the fact that we have a voice comes from someone helping us.
Right.
That we must not forget that who we really are and where we come from. And when we keep that in mind, then we won't, as the caller says, I'll put quotes around this, sell ourselves out. We will want to lift others, young people, people who really qualify to those new spaces and new opportunities. And also, we won't we'll take the battle on and not let something, a business or an industry, in our own land, so to speak. But we have to recognize that, you know what, our own privilege, that's not a time to kind of just sit back. We also need to take that privilege and speak with it and do with it.
Right. There's an obligation to mentor and help others. There's an obligation.
We are talking about cultural change in organizations. You know, what's going on in light of everything that's happening across the country, in light of the social justice movement, people still feel left behind. And we're talking with two psychologists from Psych Assets out of Detroit, out of Birmingham, Michigan, and New York. And we're talking to Roy Blumenstein-Bott and also Dr. Paula Krieger. We're just having, quite frankly, a very heartfelt conversation here. Rick, you've been very patient on 99 Superstation. Rick, what are you thinking?
Hey, I'm listening, I'm thinking, and, you know, I know Brian, and it's so important that we're able to express ourselves, you know, in some ways that not only provide relief, but they give redress and help us find problems, solve problems. Getting people involved in that way is really important. What he says, along with hundreds of people I deal with all the time, is that it's what they need for a self-expression is not in place. The option that they want is not in place. So I ask myself, why is not that option in place, right? He wants to really be involved in protecting the wealth of black people in this city because they've lived the experience. They're not going on theory. They have the actual complaint. They're not trying to compare it with somebody's opinion about what's going on. They got actual problems, but they're not given an opportunity to address it because, he, as was indicated, the leadership. For example, earlier, you know, we talk about voting. Well, what do the voting statistics say? 2008. Asians vote less than 50% of what black people vote, but they don't get killed in the street. They don't get shot down in the street. They're not deprived economically. Okay? The largest turnout by percentage of voting age citizens was 1916. I mean, I'm just trying to get people to understand. Where you start at is the first party claim. When it gets better.
Rick, let me ask you a question. I'm talking about, okay, cultural transformation. Right? Let's talk about the importance. I get about statistics. I know about 1960. I know about the 68. I know, you know, President Obama. Okay. I get all that.
Let's focus on
the future, okay? Because I have other callers as well. Okay. What is it going to take to change the culture inside of an organization that makes it much more representative of the people of the community that lives there? That's what I'm getting at.
Okay, let's get at that. And to do that, you need to get the suggestions from the people that are impacted so that you can create models that address specific problems and not hand problems off to people like journalists and writers and psychologists and telling them to come in and address issues of specific people. I mean, that's all I can say, Mark. May 3rd.
Okay. Thanks. Appreciate it, Rick. Let's get a chance to respond. Paula, Dr. Clark.
Oh, you're right.
So I just wanted to say one thing. I just have to get this in because he said the right thing. He said you have to talk to the people that are impacted. And I want to say that is our role to help create that kind of flow for their voice to be heard. When we go into an organization, that's exactly our recommendation. Let's talk to your people. Let's hear their voices. We provide that avenue to get them, you know, heard in a way. So, yeah, you know, it's not about psychologists telling you how you feel all the time. It's about us helping to facilitate and, you know, get those voices, you know, heard louder. Sorry,
let me piggyback on that. We're all very, we have some strong feelings with you for the calling. We're with you. We're resonating with you. I did this really amazing intervention a number of years ago. Fortune 500 company, they were having a lot of problems with racial issues, gender issues. They did not know what to do. The leadership got really scared. It was a critical incident, I just want to point out. They called me in. And there was a group called Justice for All. They wanted a voice, but they knew they had to come together to have that voice, and they did. The leadership at the top bought in. And then the management itself, and it was resistant, had a hard time at first. The union had a hard time at first. But I was able to pull these three groups together. And here's the key. It's a process. It's a process of letting people sit with each other, expose themselves to each other's lives. When we actually sit with each other and we hear the stories first, live and in person, and we can tear up with each other and feel each other's pain and suffering, then we really begin that mindset begins, that negative stuff begins to melt away. And that's what happened with these three groups. This was a particular business that was going to shut down. It was a huge Fortune 500 company, but one of their businesses was going to shut down. But after they sat together, these three disparate thinking groups, their hearts changed, their minds changed. And guess what? The business not only survived, but it became the model business component of that Fortune 500 company. So bottom line, let's expose ourselves to each other and the differences. We must spend the time to have the dialogue at the top, helping the mindset change from the very top, and then we cascade that forward. This is hard work, but it is the way. It is one of the ways forward.
Wendell, you've been very patient. I got to give you about a minute. I'm running up against the clock. Wendell, what are you thinking? Thanks for calling.
Good morning to you, my brothers and sisters. Hey, listen, I heard you earlier, right? And you've been beating the purpose. This is some constructive criticism. When you said that you're not going to mention any names, bro, don't do that. I need to know who you're talking about. If you're informing us, we need names. We need some names, my brother. I'm just being, it's real talk. Don't never hide who's doing the damage to us. You're doing us and yourself a disservice. Hey, my brothers and sisters, thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the input. And just, I would just say, stay tuned. All right. In wrapping up, Paula and Roy, I'll give you both 30 seconds max, and get it up against the clock. What would you like to say in closing on this topic?
So I just want to reiterate what my colleague Paula said, and Mark, thank you again for opening up this conversation about commitment statements and the larger issues around these things. But the bottom line is, we have to have dialogue. We have to be able to sit with each other and be uncomfortable in order to move us forward. That's part of growth. And we can't keep running away from being uncomfortable. That's okay. It will help us all grow and move forward. Without it, we are stagnant.
Dr. Parker, go ahead.
And that's exactly right. The commitment statement has to get followed up with some real time spent with people. People who are different from you. People who are similar to you, that you think are similar to you, but maybe different from you at the same time. This is the way forward. We must do. And we must sit with our own discomfort as we move forward.
I'd like to thank Dr. Paula Krieger and Maury Blumenstein Bodd from Psych Assess out of Birmingham, Michigan and New York City. Thank you both for having a great day.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this break. We have a 40th member of the Detroit Police Unity joining us next. We'll be right back on 1980 Superstation in the conference room with Mark Espy and a little bit of Summer Madness on the fly.